This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Yesterday morning, in a room deep inside the state legislature, the Senate Rules Committee started the ball rolling on what would be a significant change to how state government regulates various industries. This change was tucked inside an otherwise boring bill that would trim some state boards and committees to make them more efficient. But Senate Bill 10 would do much more than that. It would remove all members now serving on a wide range of governing panels, and that would allow the Republican-controlled legislature and Republican governor to name their replacements. Democrats and advocates for consumers and the environment are calling it an unprecedented GOP power grab. Republicans say it will streamline state government. Jessica Jones is WUNC's Capitol Bureau Chief, and she joins us now to talk about this. Hello, Jessica.
Hey, Frank.
So tell us, what boards and committees are going to be affected by this?
Well, there's quite a number of boards and committees that will be affected, and they include the Utilities Commission, the Environmental Management Commission, the Coastal Resources Commission, the Wildlife Resources Commission, and the Lottery Commission, and there are others as well.
Are we talking about just the heads of these committees or all the members, or how deep does it go into the committees?
Well, I would say one of the biggest things that this bill does is it would require members of those committees to immediately resign if the bill were to become law. So it could potentially completely change the makeup of a number of really important boards and commissions here in North Carolina.
Let's talk about a few that were not on the list and ask why. State Board of Education, for instance, the UNC Board of Governors, Board of Transportation, not included. Any idea why?
Well, actually, there are a couple of things in the bill that could really potentially change the State Board of Education. It wouldn't require all the members to resign, and the Board of Transportation as well. The UNC Board of Governors seems to be one of the few organizations in the state that isn't affected by this bill. So this bill would allow the governor to appoint the chair of the State Board of Education, and normally that chair is chosen by other board members. And the Turnpike Authority, which is a 9-member Turnpike Authority that was created in 2002 by the General Assembly, it would completely scrap that board and give the power that that board currently has back to the Department of Transportation. So it does in fact affect some other agencies. But I guess I would say, if you're looking at it from a bird's eye perspective, most of the boards that are affected deal with business and regulations, and leading Republicans have talked about how they'd like to streamline regulations, how they'd like to get rid of a lot of regulations because they think that that impedes business and economic development in the state.
And one big business is the power company, Utilities Commission, very important. Many advocates are concerned that Governor McCrory's previous employment, he worked for Duke Energy. That could be a conflict of interest because when Duke is seeking a rate hike and now you have all new commission members, well, anyway, what do those advocates, those opponents of this move think about the governor and his ability to appoint an all-new utilities commission?
Well, some activist groups have responded in a way that I think we would expect. They've said that Governor McCrory should recuse himself from making any appointments to the commission because Governor McCrory spent about 3 decades working for Duke Energy. And Governor McCrory has said in the past that he will appoint regulators when the chance comes up, regulators who see themselves as providing a customer service to the companies that they regulate. And customer service is one of the governor's favorite phrases.
Now, the governor's office says this bill that made it out of the Senate committee, not his idea. Any idea how he feels about it?
There's no idea so far. For now, he's not saying anything. A spokeswoman for the governor said yesterday that he hadn't seen the bill previously and couldn't comment on it. But I think it's pretty clear when you look at the bill and the kinds of changes that it would make, I think that we can see that it would certainly give Republicans a big advantage.
Who appointed the people who are currently serving on these committees?
Well, as you know, Democrats were previously in power for the most part, so there are lots of Democrats who head those boards for sure. But people here at the legislature have also pointed out that not everybody who serves on those boards are Democrats, so it would also affect some Republicans too. But again, what this bill would do is kind of create a clean sweep of the state's most important boards and commissions, and those boards and commissions would immediately have to get new members.
Yeah, that would be, I would think, somewhat disruptive. I wonder what the activist groups think about that, about disrupting, because many of these terms are staggered to keep from this kind of wholesale overturn. That's the reason you stagger terms. Now you'll have these, again, wholesale changes on very important committees.
Well, that's right. Senator Nesbitt, the Democratic senator from the western part of the state, who's been here for a long time and continues to be a real force, he brought that up. And he said just what you said, that that having staggered terms on commissions is meant to preserve kind of an institutional memory, to make sure that when new people come on, there are old people who help the newcomers understand the rules and regulations and get settled on these boards or committees. And they're important boards and committees. It is very important to have people on those committees who understand what the tasks are that they have to do, who understand the problems that the state faces. And so that certainly is an issue that's being talked about.
So this bill made it out of the Senate Rules Committee on a party line vote. What happens next? What's the likelihood that it will receive full approval in the Senate, the House, and the House?
The likelihood, you know, it's a little hard to say right now. It is on the Senate calendar for this afternoon. Now, that can change because sometimes things will pop up on the calendar and then they'll get moved back if there are some you know, negotiations behind closed doors or you know, maybe even if the governor decides that he would like legislators to take a different tack. But it is on the calendar and it did pass the committee meeting. So it has been successful so far.
All right. We will wait and see. Jessica, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Jessica Jones is WUNC's Chief Legislative Bureau Chief. And I want to talk about another important piece of legislation right now making its way through the pipeline. And this is Senate Bill 4 that would block federal expansion of Medicaid, which is, of course, a key element in implementing Obamacare. And it would leave about 500,000 of the state's poorer residents without health care. Rose Hoban joins us now to talk about the bill, what it would do, and the possible loss of perhaps up to $40 million in federal assistance if it goes through. Rose Hoban is the editor of NorthCarolinaHealthNews.org. Rose Hoban, welcome.
Hi, Frank. Thanks for having me on.
Well, before we get to all the changes, tell us, give us an idea who qualifies for Medicaid in North Carolina.
Well, right now, Medicaid covers low-income women who are pregnant, and they for a couple months after they have their babies, children, disabled, and elderly adults. So, and one thing to note is that the elderly, those are mostly people in nursing homes. They're only 10% of the Medicaid population. They use more than 20% of the Medicaid dollars, and about 17% of people on Medicaid are disabled, and they consume about 45% of Medicaid dollars. So the folks that we're talking to adding to the rolls in this Medicaid expansion really are traditionally folks who don't cost a lot to cover. That is kids and healthy working adults.
And they would be not covered if this goes through. And also, right now, the way it's set up is the federal government's going to pay for it, right?
Well, those folks are not covered now. They're all folks who are uninsured at the moment. They're people who earn from about, for an individual, they're people who earn from about $5,500 of earnings a year up to about $15,000 of earnings a year. So they're low-income working poor. Those are the folks who would, you know, finally qualify
right
for health insurance because they primarily work for places that don't give them health insurance.
And then who would qualify then under the expanded care and who would pay for that?
Well, those are who would qualify under the
right
expansion, and the Fed would be paying for it 100%. Right now on Medicaid, the federal government in North Carolina, for all Medicaid dollars, the federal government pays 65%, and North Carolina pays about 35% of the tab. For the next 3 years, the Fed would pick up 100% of the tab for those new recipients. And then after that, it would be 90% of the tab. And then the federal government says that going forward, all those new recipients would be covered at that 90% level.
It's interesting that other states, even Republican-led states, haven't taken this step to reject that money and not go with the expansion. What's going on in North Carolina?
Well, there's plenty of Republican-led states that have taken the step to reject the expansion, like Louisiana, Georgia, Mississippi. Now, although there's been some breaking in the ranks, Arizona, the Republican governors of Arizona and Nevada recently said that they would take the Medicaid expansion. But they have big Latino populations, and you know, it's becoming kind of clear that the Republicans have a problem with Latinos, so they're trying to play to that base. And the Republican governor of Ohio yesterday announced that he would take the Medicaid expansion. But primarily in the South, it's states who have rejected the expansion. We're still waiting to hear on a bunch of states like Virginia, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, and Florida. Florida Governor Rick Scott was against Obamacare the whole time through the campaign. And then as soon as the campaign was over and the president was reelected, Scott started to change his tune. So we're still waiting to hear about Florida.
Well, and I've only got about a minute left, but Republican Governor Pat McCrory of North Carolina is not sure he likes this.
Well, there's some grant money coming from the federal government to help build the state-based exchange. And part of that money would help build something called NCFAST, which would determine eligibility for Medicaid patients. And what's happening is that that's more than $40 million to finish that work that we were going to get from the federal government. If we reject all of the parts of Obamacare, we lose access to that $40 million. There are some other federal grants available, but those are not guaranteed. So we're losing $45 million of guaranteed federal funds to finish up that work. That's got to get done anyway.
Real quick, it passed the Senate. Now it's in the House. What's happening there?
Well, not much at present. It's got more than 30 sponsors in the House, but there's some interesting people who have not signed on, including the head of HHS Appropriations, Kerry Republican Nelson Dollar, and Speaker Tom Tillis hasn't signed on either. So the Senate's been really aggressive on moving on this bill, but one wonders if the House will be as fast to move on it.
Rose Hoban, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Frank.
Rose Hoban, the editor of NorthCarolinaHealthNews.org. We also talked to Jessica Jones, our Capitol Bureau chief. Just ahead, just how smart is your dog? Find out on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.